Blog Talk Radio.
The stars at night are big and bright, deep in the heart of Texas. The prairie sky is wide and high, deep in the heart of Texas. The sage in bloom is like perfume, deep in the heart of Texas. Reminds me of the one I love, deep in the heart of Texas. The cowboys cry, "Ki-yip-pi-yi," deep in the heart of Texas. The doggies call, deep in the heart of Texas, deep in the heart of Texas.
Good evening, and welcome to Contending for Truth Radio. You might notice we had a little bit of change in intro music for the night. Just got back from the Texas GOP convention in Fort Worth and had an absolutely incredible time. For somebody who loves politics and loves current events, I'm going to tell you, folks, it was like crack cocaine. We had so much fun. We got a special guest with us on tonight, Brian Glover. You might know him on Blog Talk Radio as Smokey Texas, Smokey TX. We got to meet, and Dan Butcher, I believe, is going to be calling in soon from Pundit Press. Got to meet a lot of people here in Texas that I've been communicating with and on social media and other ways. Finally got to shake their hand. We just had a great time. We're going to talk a lot about that. We're going to talk about state politics. We, of course, are going to talk about Eric Cantor and his humiliating loss this evening, the majority leader in the House. We are just going to have a great time. Let me tell you, folks, when I moved to Texas 6 months ago, almost 6 months ago, this time that I've been here has been really kind of surreal. You know, it takes a little while after you move, especially a big move like this, for it to really hit home. But I sat in the convention center with 10,000 other Texans singing that. And I got a video of it, but it wasn't complete, so I didn't use that. I wanted to use that. I wish I had gotten the whole thing. But let me tell you, sitting there next to my good friend Michael Smith and his wife Angela, and listening to 10,000 Texans clap and sing Deep in the Heart of Texas finally made it real for me, folks. I'm here in Texas. In the midst of some Texas politics, we're having a great time. And let me tell you, folks, the conservatives won this last weekend at the convention. We've been winning. We won the primaries when I first got here. And, of course, we've talked about it before. Texas has more elections than anybody. Everything's bigger in Texas, including the election schedule. We went through a runoff. We went through a special election. We've got another special election coming up on August 5th. We'll be rooting on Steve Toth like we were during the primary and during the special election. But let me tell you, the folks everywhere, the conservatives, are beating back the establishment in Texas. And I believe keeping Texas red is a big thing, but I also believe that Texas is going to be the starting point where we really start pushing back against the far-left policies of the administration and the Democratic Party. I believe it's where the Democratic Party starts to realize that their entire group of Democrats don't agree with them. Texas Democrats are very, very upset right now. They're upset with Wendy Davis. They're upset with Battleground Texas because Texans in Democrats in Texas aren't like Democrats out in California. Democrats here in Texas are kind of conservative, folks. And I really think that they start losing big time Democrats to the Republican Party here in Texas. The left here, the Democrats that are controlling the left are trying to make unisex bathrooms like they did out in California. They believe they want to do stringent gun control. Texans don't go for that. And there's a wide, wide variety of things that Texans, even on the Democratic side, do not believe in that the Democratic Party nationwide is running with, because they have allowed the left to gain control of their party. And I believe that about the rest of the nation, folks. I don't believe that most Democrats really believe with the end game of where Obama and Pelosi and Reid want to go. I don't believe that for 5 seconds. I believe they just don't realize what that end game is. And that's why we join you folks on American Sovereignty. That's why we do this every week. That's why Dan and I do this show, and we do a show on Saturday. That's why Rodney Lee of Conover and I do Conover U on Thursday nights, because we want to get the word out. We want to talk to people about these things. So with that, and with no further ado, we want to start introducing everybody we've got. I'm going to pass it first to our guest for introductory remarks. Brian Glover is somebody I've been getting to know. Thank you, Teresa Bresky, my good friend up in Minnesota, for introducing us. He does some great posts, folks. Dan, you are going to like Brian a lot. Brian is a history buff. And Brian does posts daily on Texas history. I enjoy reading those, enjoy sharing those. And he's a Blog Talk radio host. I'll let him tell you about his shows that he does. And he's just a good around old-time fashion guy that we just had a great time. It was great to finally get up and give you a great big bear hug, Brian. Welcome to the show. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing fine, Scott. Thanks for having me on. My blog is somewhere in Texas. This is something that I started after the re-election of this piece of crap president we have. The people need to know their history, and I love history, so that's basically what it is. It's smokytx.blogspot.com, and it kind of gets tiring sometimes writing history, trying to find something new every day. But you know, there's so much history out there that I'm gonna be able to do that for a while. And not this Saturday, Sunday, but the next Sunday, the 22nd, me and a friend of mine, Gulf Dog, he's also from Texas down in Galveston area, we're going to have a new Blog Talk radio show called BNR Radio. And we're hoping that people enjoy it. We're going to have it after on Sunday night after the football games, mainly for the fall, because that's his specialty is football. And so that's what that's going to be about. But we will talk politics, current events, news. And we'll talk about whatever is got a burr up his saddle on that day. And like you said, it was really great meeting you, meeting Dan Butcher, meeting his wife, meeting Sid Miller, which you were always located at. And Sid was a great guy. And Scott Turner, what an awesome person. And Carl Pittman. There's so many people I met that, you know, this is my first convention to go to. And I really had a blast, and I can't wait to 2 years ago to the one in Dallas, and I'm already counting down the days. Back to you.
Well, and it was great. It was great sitting at that Sid Miller booth, and we'll talk about that also in a little bit. I'm going to tell you, Sid Miller was at the top of my list before the weekend. He shot up even higher after I got to spend some good quality time with him, and we'll talk about that. And now we're going to pass it down to my co-host, Jennifer Montrose, down in Alabama. Jennifer has been fighting the far-left activists on the animal rights. And I'll tell you, there's a difference. We're going to have Wesley Smith on one of these days here soon. There's a difference between an animal welfare. We're all concerned about animal welfare. I love my cat. I take good care of my cat. I want to make sure he's taken care of. I want to make sure he's comfortable. And animal rights. There are people out there that believe that the animal should have more rights than a human being. And Jennifer's been fighting that one of the biggest groups on the far left, the animal rights activists, for the last few weeks, and she's won that battle. Jennifer Montrose, so proud of you. You're going to say that every time I get a chance. How you doing down there? You're on your way from Baton Rouge back to Alabama.
Yes, we're waiting on the governor, Bobby Jindal, to sign the bill, SB 250, in the law. We had a gentleman that owns the Tiger Truck Stop in Gros Tête, Louisiana. And the animal rights activists for the last 5 years have been attempting to try to take his tiger away from him. They want to, really, what they would like to do is to take away the rights of all animal owners and let animals run free, because they don't believe that we should have, you know, people hunting for fish or for deer. There should be no meat market in the grocery store, you know, all those things. You know, the leather shoes that you have on your feet, they would rather see you wearing, you know, shoes made out of a grass or leaves or whatever, you know, nothing to do with leather. So, you know, they come out, the recent, most recent thing is they have taken a picture of a tiger from another country. They purchased the picture in its habitat, a picture of the cat in its habitat. It's not Tony. But they have created a petition. They're raising money. They want people to donate money to the cause for Tony's new home, which is a lie, because Tony's not going anywhere. But they want these people to think that. So they're showing a picture that's not Tony, passed them off. And so, you know, we're dealing with that on the legal realm of things with our attorneys and stuff. But there's a lot of current things going on. We're getting prepared to plan for the movie premiere of How to Kill a Tiger, which was done by Third Coast Digital Films, Ted Baldwin, director, which exposes the lies of the progressive left with the animal rights activists. You know, they just it's almost like, you know, they don't even care about the facts. They're not looking at what they can do to save the welfare of an animal. Even like Carol Baskin down in Big Cat Rescue down in Tampa, Florida, she started out with her sanctuary. She bought tigers and raised tigers, mass-producing tigers, claiming that they were rescued tigers, which was not the truth. That was a lie. And then once they found out, you know, she was getting citations and, you know, and stuff for all kinds of violations and stuff. She changed the name, and it was Easy Street something, and now it's Big Cat Rescue. But they have got so many problems that when they were looking at a facility to move Tony to, they totally took Big Cat Rescue out of the picture, and then they were looking at a sanctuary in Colorado. You look at some of these places, you know, and they're like rusty wire cages, and the demographics of where they are in proximity to the people that live in the community and stuff, it's horrible. You know, the conditions that they have them in, you know, and tigers typically, at least Bengal tigers, they do not do well. They're loners. You know, so you try to move this cat, move Tony from his home where he's been for the last 14 years since he was 6 months old. You know, it would require him to be neutered, declawed, and all that stuff. So he would totally lose his opportunity to mate again if he wanted to. You know, anyway, so we want to, you know, another thing that we're fighting is PETA. PETA is definitely doing a lot of things, doing a lot of damage. You know, in the name of supposedly they're supposed to be a part of protecting the animals, you know, but it's a big propaganda. They want to prosecute these animals, pass them off, you know, make money off of them, and they're raising money. They have all these, like, nonprofit status stuff they're doing, you know, and they're not really supposed to be lobbying, but they do. They skirt under the law, barely, you know, and when we were able to go up against the highest paid lobbyists in Louisiana and defeat them, that was a big deal for us. And we're not done, because, you know, when it comes time for the next legislative session, we'll see what we're going to do then. But in the meantime, you know, be listening out, looking out for the potential possibilities for Tiger Fest. The Tiger Truck Stop is on I-10. If you're coming or going from through Gros Tête, Louisiana, Baton Rouge, or Port Charles, there's it's a really wonderful thing. We saw the tiger today. Tony was feeding and relaxing and having a good time. The other day we were there, and he was swimming in his swimming pool. So, you know, people seem to think that he's a lonely tiger, that he paces the floor, he's on cement only. there's all kinds of lies that they want to spew out, you know, and stuff. And we've had a couple of columnists and reporters that seem to just buy into the liberal agenda and stuff, you know. And that's happening a lot of places. You know, we're finding that not just with the animals, but we're seeing that even like with Second Amendment rights, you know, with people that are dealing with gun rights and that sort of thing, and the right to protect your own property. I mean, we're dealing with things like Agenda 21 in certain areas. You know, we had an incident in Alabama Congressional District 6 that there were a couple of voting places where they took away the right, because we're an open carry state, but they wanted to say that if you were open carrying into a voting polling place, that you were not allowed in. So, first of all, you know, the sheriff is denying your right to open carry, so they're giving you a choice. Either you can go in and put your gun away, go in and vote, or keep your gun and not vote, which is totally a violation of your constitutional rights. So we've got a couple of people that are fighting to change that, you know, and, you know, we're not saying that all sheriffs, that all state police are bad. We're not saying that police officers are bad in general, but we are saying that we do know that there are some people that have bought into this liberal mindset. They've been bought off. We know that there are some people, and the part that I don't like is that for one bad lemon you have out there, it makes it look bad for the rest that are doing the good thing, you know. And so, you know, I would love for us to bring in a constitutional sheriff that we've got a couple of people out there that I can think of that would be really, really good for us to highlight. But, you know, Texas is doing quite well. And I am really, really looking forward to seeing how some of these races are going to shake out, you know, and stuff. And I know we've got some other states. I know Virginia's one that just recently had their elections, and Eric Cantor really lost. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Dan.
Oh, fantastic. Thanks, Jennifer. I'm glad to hear everything's going great over there. This, you know, this week has been a real, real exciting week. Obama really stuck it to himself with this trade. As Scott was saying, you know, he has gotten the whole Democratic Party pissed off at him. Nancy Pelosi and Dianne Feinstein both stood up against him. Now, when you lose those two, his two biggest fans, you know he's in trouble. And I am so happy to hear that, you know, even the Democratic Party has had enough of him. It's about time for some change. And now Benghazi, we have Hillary Clinton saying Benghazi was nothing. And she went out today on national TV and said it was his choice to go over there. And that is an outright lie. She requested that he go over there, Ambassador Stevens. And she was saying that, you know, there's so many other places that are under risk of being attacked, and that Benghazi was a lower priority. And fact is, that's crap. They knew, she knew exactly what she was putting them into. And that was one of the leading factors and leading places where you were going to see an attack from the Taliban. And sure enough, look what happened. He begged for more protection. And they had a SEAL team within very short distance that could have gone in there immediately and could have provided the embassy with a lot more protection. And she didn't allow them to go. And they went in on their own to save 30 members of the embassy staff, of which, I don't know if any of you noticed, we have not been able to talk to any of them. The Democratic Party has totally blocked access to these people. And as for Extortion 17, nobody's talked about it. Even though it was the biggest act of treason coming directly from the White House in history. And people need to know the truth. It's time that we, you know, and it's nice to see that even the Democrats are fed up and they don't like the direction we're moving in. So you're going to see this summer a major shift. And come November, the Democratic Party is going to, I have a funny feeling, is going to get a whooping. And so will the elites in our party. They have announced basically war against the conservatives. They already attacked Ted Cruz. And they were saying basically everybody else is on the list too. And if the rhinos want to declare war against us, you know something? This movement, the conservative movement, is growing, as Scott said, by leaps and bounds. We are on a roll now that is not going to stop until we finish. And this is really, really good. I mean, what happened in Texas today is fantastic. I'm hoping the same happens in Virginia. That's another big state where we got a few rhinos we need to get rid of. And it's time for the conservatives to take over. It's time for the rhinos to go away. And it's time for positive change. And I think you're going to see positive change on both sides. And I'm really excited that, you know, after I've been, involved with this for some time now. And for many years, you know, we sat there and it felt like we were not getting anywhere. And now all of a sudden, you know, we can see progress being made. And Jennifer, you know, what you did down there over in Mississippi is fantastic. You know, it shows that people are opening their eyes and people are finally starting to see what is really happening to this country. You know, everything from animal rights to civil rights, and now Obama opens our borders to basically every immigrant child in the world. They're shipping them in from all over the place, and that's going to cost us another couple billion dollars and is in violation of the Constitution. And people are really, really pissed. You know, Congress is furious about that, too. You know, twice in 1 week, he stepped on Congress's feet. People are fed up with this guy. And it's time to make changes. And even though I'm not a Biden fan, anybody's better than him, than Obama. And it's time for change. And you know something? I would love to see that boot print in his rear end as he gets thrown out of office. And I hope they follow up with federal charges against him, because he needs to be in jail. And that's the only place he needs to be. With that, I'm going to pass it back to our primary host, Scott. Back to you.
Well, thank you, Dan and Jennifer and Brian. Some, you know, it's important things to be said, and we're gonna discuss a little bit of all of that we talked about again as we continue throughout the show. I want to start out with the Texas primary a little bit, chit-chat with Brian about some of the things we did. You know, he talked about Sid Miller, and let me tell you, folks, Sid Miller, I was highly impressed with and have been for a long time before we even moved from Texas. My good friend Michael Smith, give a shout-out to Conservative Nation Media and Conservative Nation Radio, the Michael Berryman Show, my good buddy here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, introduced me to Sid Miller before we ever left California. And he was one of his top candidates. And he said, Scott, you'll really like this guy. And I want to tell you, I got on Facebook and I chatted with a few friends I had here in Texas, and I got the same thing from everybody. And that's that what Sid Miller says he will do is what he will do. He's not going to go to Austin. He's not going to become the agricultural commissioner and say one thing in the campaign and then do another when he gets there. He's firm and he's solid. As I've gotten to know Sid, we've had him on this show. We've had him on Saturday Symposium as a guest. I've talked to him a few times on the phone and chatted with him a little bit on Facebook. We've, of course, had his campaign manager, the great Colton Buckley, on for a show. I really had grown to a point where I had a lot of respect for the man himself, not just liking his campaign. But let me tell you, after this weekend, and I think Brian will agree with me on this, Sid Miller shined. I'm going to tell you, when he got up there to speak, he rocked the house. I would be willing to say, and because there was a lot of other people saying he had the best speech of the whole weekend. He got up there and he basically told Michelle Obama, "Lady, we've been raising good young men, strapping young men and young women healthy here in Texas for 200 years, and we don't need you or anybody else coming in here and telling us how to raise and feed our children." Watch for a really good meme to come out as soon as we get the good copy of that video. And he rocked the house. But I got to spend some good quality time with Sid. We went out to Cattleman's there in downtown Fort Worth for dinner Friday night and got to really sit and visit with him and really got to get in depth into some subjects like the water situation here in Texas and his solutions, his immigration solution, which I think is an excellent, excellent solution, fair on all sides. And let me tell you what, I grew to really, really have an even higher respect for the man. But another thing we did was we sat and we watched him. Like Brian said, I spent the whole time pretty much at the Sid Miller booth helping him as much as I could, but watching him interact with the people. And let me tell you, there's one thing that I will never forget the rest of my life, and that's that great big Sid Miller grin. You know, Sid Miller, when he's out and he's shaking hands and getting to know people, he just has a grin that you just would not believe. You look at any of the pictures he's taken, except for a few serious pictures he's taken where he's meaning to look serious. Sid Miller is grinning from ear to ear. He loves what he's doing. He's a good man, and he believes in Texas, and he believes in this great country. And he's a fighter. He's willing to stand up and fight. He's already been up at the Red River meeting with the BLM and basically saying, come and take it, folks. You're not taking this land. We're going to fight you. He's willing to fight for the water. The feds already control 40% of the water here in the state of Texas. They want to come in and control all 100%. And as we know, the federal government cannot micromanage. If you want to know exactly what happens when the federal government and the left starts getting in control of the water, just look at all the people in the southern San Joaquin Valley that are out of work because the far-left animal activists, Jennifer Montrose, in the Bay Area have cut off the water to one-third of the southern portion of the San Joaquin Valley, which at one time fed one-third of the world and employed a lot of people. So it's been really important. I believe the agricultural commissioner is one of the most important races here in the state of Texas, and I just really did. I'm going to pass it to you, Brian, to talk a little bit about that, and then you can segue into some of your other thoughts about what went on at the convention. But it was just an incredible experience just to sit there and spend time with the man. I also got to know another one of his friends, Walt Roberts, an actor. You might know him from a couple of movies he's got out. Dakota Summer just came out, and also the movie Parkland. He's working on a movie right now called Hot Air, where he plays a Marine. He's a singer, and he's an actor, but he was also, at 22 years of age, he was in the House of Representatives in the state of Oklahoma, youngest one ever elected. Got to know some of Sid's friends. Let me tell you, like Herman Cain said, surround yourself with the right people. He did. Brent Graves got to meet. Todd Smith, somebody I've been looking forward to getting to meet. You might remember Ann Richards and Clayton Williams, that governor's race here in the state of Texas a few years back. Todd Smith was the campaign manager for Clayton Williams. Got to hear him tell some great stories. So it was just a great time. And with that, Brian, I'll pass it to you.
Yeah, well, you know, I remember Sid, the way he shook my hand. You know, people from that part of Texas, this is like a dairy. They make it's the dairy capital of the state of Texas. I believe that county, Erath County, where he's from. And my family comes from there. And those people out there, they know how to treat people, and they treat everybody the same. The first time they meet them, everybody's equal, no matter anything. I mean, they don't put any kind of labels on anybody. Everybody's equal. And he showed it this weekend, the way he treated everybody that came by that booth. He jumped right up out of his seat, took a picture of the ass. That's one thing that I'm going to be sad about from now into eternity, I guess. I didn't get a picture made with him. But better, I'll get it next time. Because, you know, he will win. And, he, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that he's going to be a great commissioner. And, you know, like you said, there's lots of battles going on in Texas. They're trying to take land along the Red River. They're taking water rights out in San Angelo area. There's a lot of battles here that we need somebody that knows the ranching life, and he has the ranching life. He's got, you know, ranching in his blood. You can just feel it when he shakes his hand that he has worked for a living for his life. You know what? You know, one of the first things that really struck me about this convention, when we walked in the building, right when it was all getting started on Friday, they had a 8-year-old girl. She read the letter from William Travis that he sent out from the Alamo. And this 8-year-old girl, she put more emphasis, and she didn't read it. I mean, she just orated it. She just said it. She did it from memory. And she put more emphasis in the right words, and it was awesome. I mean, it made chills up my back when she got to the very end of it. She said, victory or death. It was awe-inspiring that somebody that young already knows that much about Texas history. And you know, like Scott Turner, he's going to be a great speaker. We need to get him in the speakership, get rid of Strauss, get some conservatives running the government so he can put some conservatives in the committee. Strauss has always stacked the deck against anything the conservatives wanted to do. He made a deal with the Democrats. Hey, you get me elected, I will do this stuff for you. I mean, I will give you this job, that job. We need somebody in there that will put some people like we need in there, conservatives. We get Texas is, you know, Tea Party showed this weekend that we do have some pull in this state. We just about everything on that platform was voted on through the conservative branch of that platform. There were some battles in there. There was the 5-hour debate on the immigration, but it all ended. It was on the conservative way, and conservatives are here to stay in Texas. And, you know, even like Scott said earlier, even some of the Democrats, this state, the real, true, old-dog Democrats, they're conservative. The new brand of conservatives in the big cities, some of them might be the socialists like our president, but most of the people in Texas, Democrats and Republicans, are really conservative at heart. And they're all waking up. They're seeing all our rights being yanked from us, our land rights, property rights. They're going to try to take away our speaking rights. They can't do it in Texas. This is where, like Perry said, this is where Democrats go to get buried. And thank you, Scott.
Well, and exactly. And I just have to say, it was so good to meet you, Brian, finally. You and I and Dan, we're going to have you on a Saturday show. Dan and I talk a lot about history. And you and I have a mutual appreciation for history. In fact, a lot of appreciation for Texas history. And I've been learning a lot from you, from your posts. very well written, and it would encourage everybody. We'll let you give out that the web address here when I hand it back to you. You know, Brian, there were a lot of things going on this week at that convention. One of the things that I'm glad you brought up, because I'm going to post the video as soon as I get the convention copy. I recorded her a little bit, but I didn't realize what was going on until she got started. So I didn't get from beginning to end. So I haven't posted it on YouTube or on Facebook. But let me tell you, folks, that little 8-year-old girl stood up there and read that letter from Travis. And I'm going to tell you, she brought tears to my eyes. And she brought the house down when she did that. And, you know, folks, starting out the weekend on Friday, of course, they've been doing some things, Rick Perry and some people had spoken on Thursday, but really starting out the weekend on Friday, she started a momentum in the mood that was in that room. And then, of course, I'll tell you, folks, like I said, it took me a while to get really past the surreal point of being a Texan. But I'm going to tell you, I know Teresa B., my good buddy, is listening. She knows. We chat on just about a daily basis. It's still been kind of surreal to me. But when we sat there and sang deep in the heart of Texas in that room of over 10,000 people, it all of a sudden became real. But Brian, I want to pass it back to you to mention anything else that you noticed about that weekend. I'll tell you, we saw and we did a lot of things. We saw some great people, but there was a mood in that room, especially that conference room, of people understanding that we are going to not only keep Texas red, but I believe we're going to keep Texas redder. And Battleground Texas has been in here. I think they made a mistake. I think they came in here thinking that they were coming into California and we're just going to stir some things up. Now, we know we can't just ignore them because they are out getting people to vote. That's their main job. They're looking and they're trying to win my hearts and minds. But at the same time, they're stirring up the base. But there was kind of a real mood in that place, wasn't there, Brian?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you could tell, you know, that everybody was ready for the fight because it's going to be a fight. You know, if they had a better governor candidate, it would be more of a fight. But she's kind of just spitting a bit at the moment. She can't do anything right for, you know, the Hispanics in the Democrat Party. They're not going to vote for her. All along the border, there's counties out in West Texas that she didn't get a single vote in the Democrat primary. All Democrats just stayed home. So, you know, next time they might have a candidate, but this time their governor candidate, she is. And I love seeing people from the Northeast, California, and, you know, New York, all that area, send their money down here, trying to do what they've done in other places, you know, turn it blue. Texas is not going to go blue that fast. I mean, it might end up blue down the road because we haven't really been red. Well, I guess the first, in my lifetime, there was only one statewide person elected as a Republican back in 1961. That was John Tower. He was a senator. And, you know, until 1980 when Reagan won his election, then Texas sort of shifted to the red. But it's only been red solidly here in probably the last 20, 25 years. But, you know, they come down here thinking that they're going to be able to play their games, you know, cheating into the voting like they've done anywhere else. They're not going to be able to get away with it here. We got the voter ID law that people have to use when they go to the elections. And Texas is just a different animal. People don't understand how conservative Texas really is until they come here. And they're in for a fight.
They are in for a fight. It's one of the reasons I absolutely love living here, and I have been in charge. I feel a little bit like Sam Houston. I've been working on the Great American Migration down to the last frontier of Texas, working on trying to talk all my friends into coming down here. Teresa B's been putting up with that for the last 6 months, if not more. We've got somebody else on the line that I want to introduce you to. Not only did I get to meet Brian at the convention, I got to meet Dan Butcher. Dan Butcher is the founder and the president of Pundit Press and Pundit Press Radio, where you can find our Contending for Truth radio shows all in archive, working on getting them where we can broadcast them live. From that point, we'll be sharing that link instead of blog talks. And let me tell you, he's doing a great job with that. Got some great – I'm going to tell you, if you want to find some great talk radio, blog talk radio and other, go to Pundit Press Radio, and we'll let Dan give out the exact link to that. But all you got to do is search Pundit Press in your Google. Let me tell you, Josh Bernstein, who I have a huge appreciation for, Brian Craig, Kenneth McClinton, and many more that are on there. Also, we've got some Dan Wilson doing some writing on there. We're looking forward to that. But we had a great time. It was so good to meet you, Dan. Finally, after having conversations with you, be able to shake your hand and give you a great big bear hug. Got to meet your wife, Jane, a real sweetheart, just a really, really great couple. Dan, we got to spend some great time together. Got to hang out a lot. I wish I could.
Whoa, hello.
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 I think we lost Scott.
We lost
the host. I think we lost Scott.
We're here.
Hey, Dan, is that you?
That's me.
Dan and Jennifer.
Yeah. Well, Dan, this is Dan Butcher. I think we lost Scott.
I'm gonna
call back in real quick and see what we can do here. I think we all gonna have to all call back in.
Well,
right, I'm going to hang up and try to call back in.
sorry about that, folks. I pushed the wrong button. So, Dan, go
ahead. Scott, I was just talking with Dan and Jennifer, and we were talking behind your back when you when it looked like you hung up on us like that. Scott just going to do the show all by himself. We're just going to listen.
Oh, wow.
Anyways, Dan, it was great. I don't know how much got cut off, but it was great meeting you. We had a great time, and I'll pass it to you for your thoughts on the convention and what went on and the good time that we had.
Oh, man, it was, you know, first of all, it was, you know, I posted this on my Facebook page because I wanted my readers and listeners to know this. Of everything that took place at the convention, the highlight of the convention for me was getting to meet Brian, getting to meet Scott, and getting to meet the underground professor and hanging out with these guys. It was a joy, and it was a blessing, and, you know, I think some friendships were made there, and we did a lot of stuff at the convention. We had a lot of fun, but we did a lot of work, too, and everybody that saw my wife there knew that she, and Brian can attest to this, that she was probably one of the hardest working people there, working behind the scenes, meeting with elected officials, meeting with elected officials' wives. A lot of people were stunned. You know, she would go up and meet Cecilia Abbott or go up and talk to Heidi Cruz. So she wasn't only working, you know, trying to get the points across to the elected officials themselves, but she was also mingling with the wives because they heavily influence as well. But, you know, my big take from this was the fact that, and you were talking about this earlier, that, you know, the Democrats had made the state of Texas a target. They were really wanting to turn the state blue. In the mainstream media was focusing on the governor's race between Wendy Davis and Greg Abbott. Well, as we've seen, Wendy Davis's campaign is a complete joke. It's a farce. It is completely imploding. The other day she's not getting any funding whatsoever from the National Democratic Party. And the other day I ran a story on Pundit Press. It was actually yesterday about how she's now playing the race card, you know, trying to get support. But her campaign is dead in the water. But in reality, what the Democrats were trying to do they were really focusing on the state legislature. They were wanting to make gains in the state legislature to try to reduce the supermajority that we have, that the Republicans have in the legislature. It actually looks like now with the quality of candidates that we've put up there, running for the state senate, running for the house, running for we have Sid Miller, our candidates for governor, our attorney general, you name it, lieutenant governor. It looks like the Republicans are going to actually increase their supermajority in the state legislature here. And one thing walking in this convention, the death of the Tea Party, the conservative movement, has been greatly exaggerated, guys. And we certainly saw that tonight with Dave Bratt, with a major upset of Eric Cantor. Folks, that was the House Majority Leader, an ultra-rhino, that went down tonight to Dave Bratt. So you're seeing the conservative movement. The death of it has been greatly exaggerated. And one thing I took away from this convention, if you looked around, there were three distinct movements. Number one, the Hispanic conservatives, Hispanic Republicans, they had a major presence at this convention. That the Democrats have been targeting Hispanic voters, and I think they have greatly underestimated their ability, to turn the state blue by targeting Hispanic voters, because the Hispanic voters here in the state of Texas, whether they're Democrat or they're Republican, still tend to be, pretty conservative in their values. They're pro-family, pro-life. So they greatly underestimate that. Another thing on the convention, you saw the black conservatives had a very strong presence and strong voice there. We certainly saw that with Carl Pittman, and had the absolutely joy to be able to sit and visit with him and talk with him. And he was actually on the Underground Professor show on Sunday night with a really great interview. And then, of course, the youth movement. The mainstream liberal media loves to portray the Republican Party as a bunch of old men with white hair. But what you saw at this particular convention is the youth movement really, really played a role, and they took this convention over. And you saw all of those fractions come to play in the fight that took place in that massive 5-hour debate that we had over immigration reform, and how important that particular part of the platform was, but nothing else even mattered. The other parts of the platform sell through, but it was that immigration portion that was really important. And I was just on Ken McClinton's show just a few minutes ago, and we were talking about this, that immigration fight for the entire nation began in the state of Texas this past Saturday afternoon. And what happened in Texas is greatly going to affect the immigration fight that's going to take place nationwide in Congress over the coming weeks and months heading up to the midterm election. So, it was just a wonderful experience, and it was great to be able to visit with people and make a lot of new friends and do a little bit of work. We actually did do a little bit of work while we were there too, Scott.
Yes, we did. We had a great time. We broadcast the Saturday Symposium show, and you were there with me. Trying to do that over the noise wasn't real easy, but we had a great time. And I do also want to mention the Underground Professor, another blog talk, an incredible blog talk host, in fact. One of the best I've ever heard. Got to listen to him last night as he had Carl Pittman running for sheriff in Harris County, author of a book, and a great, great man on. Got to hear him finally. We just had a really a great, great time. I was very, very impressed. We got another caller on the line that I want to bring into the talk, and then we'll start going round robin around our table. Ed, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, how you doing? Welcome to Contending for Truth Radio, and I'll just pass it back to you for your 2 cents worth.
Well, I just wanted to say I heard about the events you guys went to, and I just wondered if states' rights was a real big push there, and how the states' rights issue played out in that convention.
You know what? It was a huge issue there. In fact, I would say it was the foundation of the issues there. I know that almost every single one of the speakers at some point, some way, mentioned states' rights. Sid Miller did. Dan Patrick did. Soon-to-be Governor Abbott did. Connie Burton did. They all came back to it with whatever subject they were talking about. Texans, you know, we don't take too kindly to people coming here and telling us what to do. And I'll tell you, it was a huge underlying issue on everything that was done.
And Scott, I would actually add also that if Ed takes a look at the platform that was adopted by the Republican Party of Texas, the central foundation of that platform, everything involving that platform, it revolves around state rights. State rights is the underlying foundation of the official platform that was adopted by the Republicans at this convention.
Oh, most definitely. Ed, what part of Texas are you from?
Oh, actually, I'm not from Texas. I'm from Florida.
Okay.
My friend is running for governor here. His name's Wiley. He's on a Libertarian ticket. He's already going to be running against Scott and Christie. And basically, he has the proposal that if he wins the election in Florida, that he will allow gold and silver to be allowed to be used in Florida as legal tender to pay the debts and anything in Florida itself, kind of bypassing the Federal Reserve dictators out of D.C.
Well, I like that. I know Dan Wilson, you're down there in Florida, so I know that you're watching close this race. We're kind of really disappointed in Rick Scott. He didn't start out the strongest in my mind in the first place and just got worse. I know when I was in Florida, Rick Scott was I forget where he was at. In another position in Florida, and I had a little bit of respect for him, but I've watched it go downhill. That is great news, because I'll tell you, that would make a very big difference in any state that turned around and did that. One of the biggest problems we've got right now, folks, is the Federal Reserve. They start playing with dials. You know, if you've ever watched somebody play with a soundboard or play with an equalizer, you set things up and then you leave them. And I kind of equate that to the Federal Reserve. They like to go start changing dials. And when you turn one dial down on an equalizer or a mixer, you have to turn some other ones. Otherwise, you end up with bad sound. You got to keep this balancing act. And that's what the Federal Reserve does. They fight against each other, number one, raising up and down interest rates and trying to balance things out. And it's a real bad thing. We're going to have Rich Lowry on here soon. We'll talk about how the Fed recognizes wage increases as inflation. So when wages go up, they try and tamper that down. And ever since they've gotten in control, wages have pretty much been stagnant ever since they've gotten firm control over certain things. We look forward to having Rich on here soon. Speaking of Rich, we want to give him a great big shout-out. He just got married this weekend. The economist Rich Lowry, somebody I have great respect for. We're going to have him on the show. So, Ed, with that, I'll pass it back to you. Got anything else to say?
Well, you're talking about the Fed note. Also, the EU has just come out and says, hey, you know, we want our centralizing currency to be great, but nobody's really buying it. So we're going to pay you, and it's actually the negative interest. They're paying the banks to take their EU note on and to try to centralize deeper into the European community. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, I saw that. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
So, I mean, that's basically, I mean, the Fed ain't far from going to that step, too, where they're going to pay the bankers to take the notes because they're just, you know, printing more and more money, and, you know, it's all floating to the top where the middle class and the poor are getting stomped on.
Exactly. Well, Ed, we'd invite you to hang on the line. We're just going to do some round table now. We're just going to continue to go around the table. Going to go back down to Alabama a little bit. Going to go to Florida a little bit. We'll come back around, and we'll just keep going around. We got some good time going, but let's try and keep everybody within a few minutes, see how many times we can go around that table. With that, Jennifer Montrose, you've been really active in Alabama politics for a long time. And I've said it on this show a lot of times, Alabama rocks. They're leading the nation in a lot of efforts down there. Of course, our good friend Kay Carl Smith down there with the Frederick Douglass Republicans. And, of course, Common Core, a huge, huge subject. Common Core is being fought with all no holds barred down in Alabama. And you just had your primary and some outcomes on that. So, Jennifer, I'll pass it to you, and then I'll let you pass it to Dan.
Well, we've got a July the 25th. It's going to be some runoff elections where Reese McKinney is going up against John Merrill for Secretary of State. And we have Terry Dunn, incumbent, running against Chip Baker for Public Service Commissioner Place 2. We've got Jim Ziegler, who's running for State Auditor against Dale Peterson. Some of you may have heard about Dale Peterson when he ran for Agriculture Commissioner. Back in 2010, he had a pretty big ad that went out viral, shotgun ad that was, and they're both good guys. One of the things I think that we're dealing with in Alabama that is happening across the United States is our military men and women and what's happening with their benefits and their medical care is, it's awful. And we're getting reports here in Alabama with the VA and some of the negative things that have come out. And, we've got a guy, Sean Siebert, who's running in Texas. I think that Scott may have some information on him. But I know I got to introduce to him in 2012 when he ran. Kenneth McClinton introduced me to him, great guy, military. And such. But, we've got to do, this recent debacle of, with these Guantanamo, the detainees and swapping them out for someone who has decided to abandon our U.S. policies and become Muslim, that sort of thing. We've got to do our homework. We got to do what we need to do. We can't sit on the sidelines. And I'm telling people, I got a roommate whose daughter was in the military, served three terms in the Army. She was at Fort Hood. There's some stories that she could tell. A lot of the people that are within her unit who got sick, unidentified illnesses, still can't seem to find out what's wrong with them. All they know is that they're having kidney trouble, and when they go to try to get answers, on the medical base, they can't find any answers. And these are the people that are fighting on the front lines for our freedom. These are the people that, and she was a gun runner, these are people that are fighting for our country to stay free, keep our constitutional, rights alive and well. And, we have people that just roll over on that, don't give a rip. And, it just really saddens me. And we just recently this year in Alabama, you have to show ID now to vote, which is a good thing, there was some polls. I haven't seen the results yet, but we were looking at to see how much voter fraud was actually spotted this year in our last election, now that you have to show a picture ID to vote. I think we had the lowest turnout that we've had in a long time. I know that the another piece of news is Birmingham, Alabama, is one of the cities being considered for the DNC convention, Democratic convention. I don't know that it will take place there just because we don't have infrastructure and the transit system to be able to handle that large of a crowd. It would be good for the economy, but I think there's probably other cities that have first priority. We're a solid red state, and we're going to stay that way. We got too many people fighting, to keep it red. And it, to me, it's not about red versus blue. It's more about value. We've got people in our state that really care. I mean, we've got people like Lisa Harris that's fighting to repeal Common Core. And I know there's some people that say, well, we got candidates that are just one-issue candidates. But, you know, some of those issues are vital. I mean, you know, my good friend Paul Arnold, give a shout-out to him from California. He's getting ready to start his radio show. He's a big advocate for, you know, no amnesty. We need to secure our borders and do whatever we have to do. And I know you can relate to this in Texas. You know, it's time that we take our laws that we have on the book and we toughen those laws. We don't need to change them. We need to make them stricter, do what we can to secure those borders. And, you know, I will tell you, you know, the Hispanic community is not dumb. They're not stupid. Democrats would make you think that, you know, but there's a lot of smart conservatives out there in the Hispanic community, the same in the Jewish community as well. you know, my hat's off to those that got to go. I ended up having to go back down to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, because we're waiting for the governor to sign the bill into law for SB 250. We have a lot of animal rights activists that were making threats to come to Gross Tet, Louisiana, try to, you know, in the middle of the night, they were going to take Tony the truck stop tiger and take him away, you know, so we had to be on alert, you know. But I'm glad to see that we have radio hosts, people out there, you know, that can support one another. You know, everybody has their own show, but we all have, a good common cause. We're all trying to support liberty, freedom, constitution, you know, all those things, and God and country. You know, we can't forget, you know, what it was that brought us together in the first place, you know. And I think if we have more people that become educated, informed voters, we will see a lot change. I think we have a lot of apathy, people that feel like their voice is not heard, that you know, they don't want to get involved because it just doesn't make a difference. You know, I have a good friend of mine who said she's lost faith in our government. She's lost faith in our elected officials. And I said, well, if you don't like what you see, then you need to get out there and make a difference. Go vote. And my roommate who is, you know, we don't have to register for party in Alabama, but she said, I've always voted Democrat. But she came out in our Republican primary and voted because she's watched what I've been doing and she's heard about the different candidates that are out there, and she wanted to see a difference being made, so she went and voted for the candidate that she felt was right. And it just so happened to be that all the candidates that she wanted to vote for were Republicans. You know, so vote your values. We've got to... some other candidates that are running, I know Dr. Alita Eck in New Jersey, running for Congress, doing a fabulous job. And, you know, she's leaps and bounds making some strides. She's in a Democratic stronghold. And we were talking the other day about, you know, Frederick Douglass and the things that he stood for and the four core values and how, you know, being able to educate the constituents in her area on that subject matter. She goes into them to the NAACP debate back when she ran for Senate against Lonergan, you know, and had people applauding her because she said, I'm not a Republican, I'm a Frederick Douglass Republican. People want to know that they can relate to you, you know, that you're not just looking at them like another number. You know, and we've got some other things going on. Paul DeMarco, Congressional District 6, running against Gary Palmer for Congress. That's a race. We've had the previous congressional incumbent that's retiring, and we've got we had seven candidates in that race during the primary. So now we're looking, you know, Spencer Bacus is the one that's retiring, so we're looking to replace that candidate. Replace Spencer Bacus. And so, you know, I'm starting to see another race that I'm looking at heavily, closely, is McDaniels in Mississippi running for U.S. Senate. So, you know, we've got a lot of good candidates running out there. Glo Smith in Florida 5, just a lot of different candidates out there that we've got to get behind. So, you know, take a look at what's going on in your state. Look at your local races. Look at your school board races, your commissioner races, your, you know, mayoral races and stuff. Look at their issues and see what they stand for, you know, and get out there and make a difference. You know, don't just vote because it's the party. Vote because the candidate that you believe is going to stand up for the values that you hold. We know that we are basically a center-right nation, and it's time that we get back to those values. Sam?
Thanks very much, Jennifer. And before I continue on with this conversation, I think we need to take a second and pay tribute to the beginning of our nation. For today was the first meeting of the Second Continental Congress on voting for our independence. 3 months earlier, the state of Rhode Island had separated from England, and this was the beginning of creating the Declaration of Independence. Though people say it was based on the Virginia Constitution, and there is some argument as to who actually wrote it, but Thomas Jefferson was given credit for it. So this was our first step today, 1776, when we made our first steps towards independence. And I'd like to, you know, pay a little tribute to our forefathers, because those who signed the Declaration of Independence gave it all. Out of the 55 signers, over half lost everything they had. Five of them died in the Revolutionary War. And we need to remember the contributions these people and sacrifices these people gave so that we could be living here today free. And, you know, we should never forget that. And with that, I'm going to move on. Yes, in Florida, we got a lot of things going on. Rick Scott right now is doing a last-minute ploy to try to win back his conservative base, but I think he showed his true colors in this election in the last few years, and I think he's in jeopardy this year. So we might have another a conservative over here in Florida, which we desperately need. When it comes down to the immigration aspect, we had a person on, what was it, about 3 weeks ago, Enrico Estenese, and Enrico is a DJ down in Miami, and he speaks of the American Cubans, naturalized Cubans that were kicked out during the Castro regime. And they made it here to the U.S. and they are now U.S. citizens. This group is furious with this president. They're more conservative than most people are. The only reason the illegals are for Obama is because, well, he's allowing them in. Otherwise, when it comes down to the naturalized Cubans, the vast majority of them are furious with what this administration is doing. Our press has been lying to people, you know, to everybody, saying how much the Cuban and the Mexican population like this move, when in fact it is just the opposite. The naturalized Mexican and Cuban citizens are totally against this. So we need to get that information out. You know, when it comes down to right now, we got another big primary going on in Virginia. And, Scott, I don't know if you can find out what happened over there, but we have another Tea Party candidate that is looking to take out another rhino. And I'm praying to God he does, because I just posted the other day a post on some of the crap that's going on in Washington. Like, we're paying leases on all their cars, you know, with the average lease payment being around $600 a month, with the highest being $1,100 a month, and it's from the from Virginia. And, you know, this is ridiculous. We're blowing. They have a $500 a month allowance just for lunch. And then they have, you know, we pay for basically everything that, you know, they use while they're in office. And then on top of it, you know, we're paying lifetime wages to these people. And to our forefathers who gave everything, you know, this is a slap in the face. And it's time that, you know, we stood up against this. And I am so glad to see that, you know, places like Texas are doing, you know, standing up against this, and that we are making a change. So, you know, we got the ball rolling, and we got the we're headed in the right direction, and I think this year is going to be the year of the conservative, and I think there's going to be a lot of surprises coming up in the next 4 years. And with that, I'll pass it back to you, Scott.
Well, definitely, I think there is going to be a lot of surprises, and I think all over the country. There is a momentum building. I really learned how to feel momentum when we were working on the Herman Cain campaign. We knew when we got to Florida CPAC that the beginning of that week, as I was starting to get a response from friends that were down in there and seeing things across the country, we knew before it ever happened that there was a good chance that Herman Cain was going to win. We knew what he could do when he got in front of people. I'd been saying for months, if you could just put everybody in a room and let them listen to Herman Cain for a little while, the majority of them would support him. We knew that because Gallup had a poll called a positive intensity poll that removed name recognition and basically asked of all the people that know him who supports him. And he was sitting at anywhere from 24 to 35% throughout that entire campaign. All of the rest of the opponents were sitting around 12 to 15%. Ron Paul never got up above 10%. So we knew, and we could feel the momentum growing. And I've learned to feel the momentum. I felt the momentum this weekend in Fort Worth. And I feel the momentum across the United States. People are tired. Let me tell you, and you know me, I like to go to illustrations. And when you take and you pull a pendulum, the further back you pull it, the further the other way it swings. Now, we saw this politically in 1980. We sat and we watched Jimmy Carter for 4 years pull that pendulum back further and further and further, pull the federal government's strength further and further, trying to micromanage different things, oil and gas and different things, pulled it further and further. But when that pendulum swung the other direction, when Ronald Reagan was elected, he was able to do a lot at pushing things back down to the state level because the American people were tired of what had gone on. They began to see what kind of policies the Democrats had and where they led to them on a personal level. Excuse me. I was a young child, but I remember waiting in line for gasoline. I remember my mom and dad. My dad had a pretty decent job during those years. I remember them complaining about the prices of different items going up and the different things that were going on. That pendulum was swung. The left has pulled the pendulum as far as you can pull it. They've only pulled it as far as they have because a good portion of America just doesn't pay attention anymore. They come home and they sit down and watch sitcoms and watch CSI, but they don't really pay attention. But more and more people are starting to. I think they started paying attention when they started getting those letters in the mail telling them that they weren't happy with the insurance that they used to have and that it had been canceled. We've seen that. We see as the prices of gasoline rise, we see as different things happen. We're watching right now, we're watching the news media just about drop Obama like a lead balloon. I know the first day of this prisoner swap, Chris Matthews just railed against the President of the United States. We're watching Dianne Feinstein. We can see. If you watch her, go watch a recent clip. You can literally see the smoke coming out of her ears. Now, Dianne Feinstein has been a senator since I was a little boy. She's been a senator all my life. And I don't agree with her on most things. I will say this. I have watched her mature over the years, watching her in California. I believe she's intellectually honest. I don't agree with what her intellect says most of the time, but what she says is what she believes. She just doesn't play on your side and lie if she doesn't believe it. And she's mad. I'm telling you, folks, she's angry. And if what you're seeing of her anger is what you're seeing in public, you know she's really mad behind the scenes. Even Nancy Pelosi has come out. And I believe we are going to have an incredible, incredible summer, folks. So with that, I want to get our two callers in. I'm going to pass it back to Brian and let you have some words. And then, Ed, we will bring you back in for some more words, and then we'll run around the table again.
Sounds good. On the fact that the illegal immigration part of it, the door was opened by Reagan. One of the worst things he said he did during his administration was that he did not veto the immigration law. And he let these illegal immigrants gain status, and that's why we're in the shape we're in today. If we do it again, it's only going to be three times as bad. So that's why it's important to make a stand this time. Reagan had a chance. He blew it. If we blow it this time, it's over. This country's going to be redone and remade. And I just feel that, you know, everybody's got to step up and say, look, we're not going to let people that came here illegally be a citizen. They have to go in the back of the line or do something and come in properly. But if you just give everybody that just comes in here, you just open up the border, you must have everybody in the world come in and just sit down and say, we're citizens.
That's right. And you know, I use that illustration a lot. You know what, if you go to Disneyland, you wait in line for an hour and a half, 2 hours to get on a ride, and then a bunch of kids jump the line right in front of you and get on the ride, and it's not right. We all, every one of us on this call, I guarantee you, we're great American patriots. Everybody in that room are great American patriots. We believe in immigration. That's what this country was founded on. All we ask is that you do it legally and not jump in front of the line. I'm going to say this, and I'll pass it to Brian. Brian is called off there. We got him back in. You know, folks, I worked in Trinidad and Grenada down in the Caribbean right off the coast of South America. And I got to live with those people. A lot of people, you know, you go traveling and you stay in the resort and you see the sights. I got to live and work with the people. And so many wanted to come to America. And I'd say, well, get in line and get us started. And they say, we've tried. It's so hard. So many people jumping in line in front of us illegally. It's almost impossible. And, folks, that's not right. That is not right. I would love to move every single person here that wants to come and enjoy the American dream. And I believe we've got room for that when it's done right. But, folks, when you just jump the line, and let me tell you, Here's the amazing thing. Here's the amazing thing, folks. We have got a Marine sitting in jail down in Mexico right now because he jumped the border the other direction. And the President of the United States didn't do anything to get him out. Now, you cannot tell me, Barack Obama, that you cannot get on the phone and get that guy released. Instead, he released five terrorists for a man who was a traitor. It's important, folks. I'll tell you, we're going to have Sid Miller on again here soon, and I love Sid Miller's line. He was asked a few times about what you think about the Texas solution, and Sid Miller's line was this: well, I don't know about the Texas solution, but I'll tell you about the Miller solution. And Sid Miller, we won't go into it now. We'll wait till he's on the show. But he's got a great solution that makes way for what we need in agriculture in Texas from workers. At the same time, not allowing any room for amnesty. But let me tell you, folks, the best way in the world to handle this, and I wish I could have gotten up on that delegate floor, it's really simple. Number one, border security and amnesty are not the same thing. They don't need to be discussed as the same thing. They shouldn't have even been discussing immigration. Secure that border, and then I guarantee you, folks, if you get that border secure, there'll be a whole lot of people that are willing to sit down and say, here's what we've got to do to handle immigration. Here's what we've got to do to fix this problem that we've got so that we don't have people continuing to jump across that border. So with that, Brian, I'll pass it back to you.
Yeah, Dan said that, you know, Reagan did this, but they didn't secure the border. Now all the people up in Washington, they're talking about amnesty, pass the citizenship, guest worker programs, but they're never going to secure the border. If they secure the border, I'm open for any kind of ideas about immigration reform. But, you know, that border's got to be closed before anything can make any difference, or we'll be doing this all over again in 30 more years. And, you know, ever since they started talking amnesty and guest worker program and pass the citizenship, look at the amount of people coming over. This in Texas alone, it is a blossoming. I mean, there's so many people down at Fort Sam Houston now. You can't walk on this floor because they got people laying down everywhere before they ship them off to these other cities. But they're coming across with such great numbers now. I think I've heard 6,000 a week that they put in that one building that they're catching. And, you know, and it's not just the Mexicans that have come across. It's Guatemalans, Hondurans. The Mexicans are even put up a border on their, a fence on their southern border to keep the people from coming into their country now. The fence they had wasn't doing the job, so they're making a bigger one. We ought to take some kind of clues from what the Mexicans are doing. They got the right idea. People come over there, they get sent right back home. What do? We feed them. Give them free education, health care, everything. This has got to change. We got to lock that border up, and then let's really talk about immigration reform, because we can't reform something that's not closed. I mean, we got to make our country sovereign again. I mean, we are a country. The borders mean something, and you know, I know a friend of mine. He immigrated from Australia. He had to go through the immigration process twice. So the feds lost his papers. And then when I say twice, that means he had to pay all the fees twice just to get over here. And this guy is an American citizen now, and he is one of the most patriotic people I know. I mean, he bleeds red, white, and blue. And this guy, if you want to hear somebody rail against people cutting in line on immigration, this is the guy to hear, because he's been through it. He went through it twice, and he swears that they lost his papers on purpose because they found out he was a Republican or a conservative coming from Australia. But, you know, I'm going to get back to this, the convention, when, we didn't even mention the real rock star of the Texas political scene, Ted Cruz, and his speech. I mean, the best line he gave was his opening line. He said he's been in Washington the last couple of weeks, and he's standing there in Fort Worth, and he says, you know, it's good to be back in America again. And that place went crazy. And that's the way, you know, the rest of America has got to feel, because D.C. is a totally different animal. Those people up there live in a little cocoon or something, because I don't know what they're reading, whose polls they're reading. They can live on the polls all they want, but people in flyover country, they're tired of their ass. And they need to start bringing country back to the like also what Cruz said, the real common core of America, the Constitution. That is what balances everything in this country, and they're just running roughshod over it. They, you know, we need to bring it all back to the Constitution, close that damn border, and then let's really talk about something. We can't do it until that border is closed. Praise God.
Amen. And I want to take us a little bit different direction. I want us to go round table on this. You know, we've got a great big upset going on in Virginia tonight. Eric Cantor is gone, and not only is he gone, he lost by a wide margin, folks. And it looks like Eric Cantor knew he was up against a problem. He spent almost $1 million, and Dan Bratt spent not a whole lot. Let me tell you, folks, he won by grassroots. He won by activism. He won by standing up for basic principles. I believe it's going to be the shot heard around the nation as we go into November. People were calling it, I'll tell you, Anderson Cooper called it seismic. He said it was an earthquake. It just all of a sudden caught everybody's surprise. It didn't catch me by a whole lot of surprise because I felt the momentum getting there, and I think we come close to doing it with Boehner if we just had a little bit more time. But we've got some opportunities now, and we've got to do it right, folks. We have to do it right. We can't take it for granted. Lindsey Graham seems tonight to have won his primary election, so we still haven't won all the battles. But we've got some great people running this year that are still primarying. And Sean Siebert is down there. He's going against Sheila Jackson Lee, folks. We want to see that happen. I'll tell you, Sheila Jackson Lee, she absolutely needs to go. Not only is she a far-left nut job, she's just inept. You know, Dan, I'm not sure, Dan Wilson, if you saw last week, she said the Constitution was 400 years old. The woman, she's sworn to uphold the document. She doesn't even know how old it is. And, of course, the left-wing media came on and said, oh, it doesn't matter, it was just a gaffe. Well, no, if George Bush had said something like that, they'd have still been talking about it. But we've got, you know, Sean Siebert, a great patriot, a man who served his country. We've got a whole lot of people out there, and we need to give them our support. Let me tell you, here's the problem, and I'm going to use Kenneth Sheets, my personal congressman, after moving from California. I have, I was used to supporting people far away, supporting people like Zach Poskovich and Don Chamberlain and Matt Jenkins and different people in different states because I didn't really have a whole lot I could do really locally in California where I was at. And I got down here, I've been a few months, and last week I thought, well, you know, I better start looking at who's in my own district, especially as we go to start helping Scott Turner become the Speaker of the House. And my congressman is Kenneth Sheets. And I'm going to give you, I think this is an excellent illustration and what we've got to do. Kenneth Sheets walked in 2011 with an A-plus from Empower Texas. That's Michael Sullivan's group, Michael Quinn Sullivan's group. They're a powerful group here in Texas, one of the three most important groups, along with the Eagle Forum here in Texas and the Young Republicans. Now he's got a D-minus. And I'm going to tell you what happened, folks. Here's exactly what happened. Kenneth Sheets is in a tough district. It's not easy to win. It takes him some money. It takes him a little bit of money to go. So he gets down to Austin, and he's got his principles he's standing on, but all of a sudden he meets the establishment, and the establishment is willing to help him get reelected. They're willing to help shove him some money if he'll kind of follow their way. So you know, you want to get reelected, so you do. And then you start playing that political game that we talk about. That's why I support Sid Miller. I know he's not going to play that political game. That's his record. He had that record in the Texas House. But we've got this situation here. What do we do for this man? Now, he's a firm conservative. He's firm on the definition of marriage. He is absolutely firm on the Second Amendment. He's firm on pro-life. He's a good conservative. But he's got some votes where he's voted with the other side because they're saying, here's some money to help get you reelected. How do we overcome that? Here's how we overcome that, folks. And I'm going to sit down here in the next few weeks with Kenneth Sheets. And I'm going to say, listen, here's the deal. I was the California state leader for Herman Cain. I helped develop a statewide coalition of people to help him run if the campaign ever got to California. Now, of course, it didn't. But we know. I had almost was catching up with close to 40 different county captains across the state of California. They were starting to build their groups. We were team caning. We were doing the exact same thing that Ron Paul was doing, and we were doing the exact same thing that Barack Obama was doing. We were doing the exact same thing that Battleground Texas is trying to do here in the state of Texas. Let me tell you. Barack Obama went up against Hillary Clinton, and that powerful, the most powerful political machine that has ever stood in this country. And she lost because of Team Obama. Think about that, folks. Battleground Texas knows what they're doing. We got to watch them because they're organizing, and we're just catching up. So what I want you to do, folks, is I want you to go and I want you to start helping out your candidates. We got to help Seibert. We got to help Sean Seibert get a coalition together of people willing to get out on the ground, beat down doors, pass out business cards, pass out flyers, put out signs, get on the phone and make phone calls, collect money, and spread the news about their candidate and get the candidate to spread the news about what we mean when we say we're conservative. Because I'm going to tell you, folks, if I can replace that money that he relies on to win his election with a team of people in Mesquite who are willing to get out and really do the hard work and help him win, then he no longer has to be beholden to Joe Strauss. He can tell Joe Strauss to take his committee position, and you know what? That's what we've got to do, folks. And I'm going to sit down with Kenneth Sheets here in the next few weeks, and I'm going to propose that to him. And I'm going to say, listen, I got some people here in Texas that will help you. But you've got to stand firm on your conservative principles. If you go waffling, you're not going to get the grassroots support, and you're going to have to continue to rely on that money. You're going to have to continue to vote against your conscience, and then you'll be primaried out. We don't want that. Kenneth Sheets is a good man. I've looked at him. I spent about 8 hours this last week online and chatting with a few people investigating my congressman. And great things about him, a great, great, great family man. But he's got down there in Austin, and he's being pulled, folks. He's being pulled hard. And what we have to do as grassroots activists, and listeners, no matter where you're at, listen to this. This is important. We've got Eric Cantor out. Now we've got this guy that's willing to run. Those guys, they got to stay on top of it down there. They got to get down on the ground. They got to do the hard work that it takes so that he continues to win. And he's going to probably have to work against, again, a huge amount of money to win that seat in November. But we can do it with grassroots. We know that. Got Jennifer Montrose on here who organized a whole convoy from different states heading down to Georgia. Of grassroots. We can get the people active, but it takes time and it takes effort. You've got to give some time. I would like to encourage every one of our listeners, anybody who's listening right now, you find a handful of people and you give them the support social media. You give them the support Twitter. If you can give them some money, give them some money. If you're close, you get on the ground and beat doors with them. When they're having a door knocking, you get out with them and go. Because that's how we save this nation. That's how we save this nation, and that's how we keep these guys that we put into office from swinging the other direction. Joe Strauss holds a lot of sway because a lot of people rely on him to get money back into their district in order to win again. We can fight that, folks. We saw it happen tonight in Virginia. We got a great man. He's winning. We've got a man who's waffled on all kinds of things, who's gone the first time in history, sitting House Majority Leader has toppled. And it was done by the grassroots. It was done by activists. It wasn't done by money. He was outspent, way, way outspent, like 10 to 1. we can do that. So with that, I want us to take our conversation in into that direction, not just Eric Counter, but I want to take it in the direction of grassroots and activism and doing the different things we do. Blog Talk Radio, this is a huge one. Dan Wilson, you're down there in Florida where Ed is, and Ed's got a great candidate running against probably what's two other candidates that are probably worthless. and we can do this if we keep going. Dan Wilson.
Well, I'm telling you, I love what happened in Virginia. I mean, this guy, our grassroots guy, was down like 80 to 20% in the straw poll, the last straw poll. And look at what happened. And that is going to do a lot for us in Florida. I'll tell you, I mean, I'm really looking forward to our election and our primary, and man, I can feel it coming. And you know, I was really watching the Virginia race because, you know, I knew things were pretty set in Texas, but really it was Virginia that I was worrying about because that's our foothold towards the north. And, you know, Virginia obviously is right next to D.C., and it's going to send a message that is going to, that's going to go around the country tomorrow. I mean, you're going to see the radio and TV just dedicated to what happened in Virginia, and rightfully so. Because I think for today, that was the biggest upset, and I am really pumped about that. You know, it's we've all been working in this grassroots movement for some time now. And, you know, a lot of times we've all felt, you know, we're beating our heads against the wall. But little by little, you know, when we started out with Herman Cain, you know, we saw a guy who started out his campaign with $10,000. And what he did is when he said, you know, start at the state level, and we all of a sudden we started, you know, talking about him on the state level. And by the time he got to the convention, I mean, he just took off. And, you know, it shocked the hell out of everyone to the point where the Democratic Party had to literally attack him and threaten his family before, you know, he decided to drop out. And it was only because of what the bad guys were willing to do to keep him from winning. Had they not done that, there's no doubt in my mind he'd be president today. It is, you know, this is, that election showed us the power of what it is to take things and really show, you know, by getting out there and talking and spreading the word what it can be. You know, this is not much different, really, than the elections back in, you know, the beginning of our country. Because, you know, they thought that by taking over the media, they could control everything. And they're learning a hard lesson. Because what we did during the Cain days is incredible. I mean, even though we did not win, we really set precedents. And for that, you know, I'm really, really proud of that. I mean, you know, everybody of our group here, we were all involved in that. You know, we really put our 100% into it. And it was very, very disappointing to see him drop out. But you know something? We had learned so much that we said that, yeah, okay, he dropped out. that doesn't mean the war is over. And we continued on. And we kept on building off of that one campaign. And the reason we're being so successful here today is because of that campaign. And now, after this, what just happened today is going to send waves throughout the country. And, you know, I am feeling on top of the world. You know, what happened in Texas, what happened in Virginia, you know, these were two major, major wins on behalf of the grassroots movement. We're proving that, you know something, you can have all the money in the world, but if you don't have the people behind you, it doesn't matter. And we're beating people with 10 times, 100 times, 1,000 times more money than we do. And yet we're starting to win. And it's showing you the power of the internet and, you know, Black Talk Radio and, you know, the pundit press, and how we're starting to spread. We're starting to change the rules of politics. And this is really, really, really exciting to be part of this. You know, it's, I am just, I'm tickled pink on this. Because you know something? Just wait for the rest of the primaries to come through. I mean, you're going to see some major, major upsets. And, you know, you're going to see the Democrats terrified. Because, you know something, they let it go too far. And that they thought they had it made. And, you know, it's over. You're seeing members of Obama's team bailing out right and left. They're running for the hills because they know they can see that plane is about to crash. And I'm, you know, I love it. I cannot be happier. I'm telling you one thing, Obama's going to be in the history books, mark my word, before the end of the year. It's going to be that fast because you know something? The Democrats are trying to save face. Want him out before November. And mark my word, it will happen. Because right now, just what happened in this past week is, you know, we've had so many positive things on our side happen. You know, we've showed the rhinos that your days are over. Your days are limited. And you're going to be gone shortly. And as you said, Scott, had we had a little more time, we could have gotten rid of Boehner, too. But, and even then, he actually, that race really set the donut thing. We had Boehner barely won. And he had to spend a fortune to do it.
He sure did. And Dan, I want to break in because we've got a special guest that just called in, somebody that I'm a big fan of his work. He works hard down there in Alabama, a fine Christian man with good, solid conservative principles, a big fighter of Common Core, and an activist, a very, very strong, solid activist. Trey Edwards is on the line with us. I'm going to pass it to Jennifer Montrose to give him a big introduction. She's down there with him in Alabama. I want to welcome Trey to the show. Jennifer, I will let you finish introducing Trey.
Thank you, Scott. You know, I got to meet Trey when I got jumped involved in the Herman Cain campaign back in 2011. And I have never seen somebody that was so involved in the Young Republicans in learning the ropes. Willing to do whatever it took. I mean, he was blood, sweat, and tears. I'm talking not just on Facebook going round and around like a mouse on a wheel, but he was out there. I mean, he was traveling across the state doing the necessary things. And since then, I have seen him nonstop. You know, one of the things I think is key is, you know, we take our skills that we have learned and we can multitask and adapt them to many things. And I know this year we dealt with some serious national disasters. And one of the things that I am very, very proud of Trey Edwards for doing is he got involved on social media, got, and you know, it's not about getting your name in the news, but what he did was he took the social media companies that he has and he utilized it to help get the word out. The people that were stranded when we had that major snowstorm, there were so many people that were having to do unheard-of things just to survive. In the state of Alabama, in the South, and he was an integral part of helping people and the EMS and all those that were dealing with, you know, national disaster stuff, getting the word out. We were finding people that were lost and doing so many things. Trey has just been an integral part in the Republican Party as well. And, you know, one of the things that I'm really impressed with Trey is he has really been reaching out to the young voters. That there is a couple of, you know, conservative clubs that he's been an integral part of, and he's helped to grow those groups in numbers. And, you know, and it's not for – I don't believe that for a minute that it is about Trey wanting to get notoriety for himself as he is standing up for the conservative values and principles, you know, that those of us in Alabama, you know, pride ourselves with. And you know, he's been on a couple of other radio shows. I've heard him when he's been on the Michael Hart show and some of the others. You know, and I know you've got the campaign manager for Sid Miller. He's that's in Texas that's doing a lot of things. You know, and I think we need to have more of our younger conservatives getting involved. And Trey is not necessarily as young as he used to be, you know, but he got an early start. And he has a lot to say, and I'm looking forward to bringing him on tonight. Trey Edwards, welcome to the American Sovereignty Radio.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you for that amazing introduction. I wanted to come on tonight to sort of share some information about what's been going on up here in Lauderdale County, Alabama, over the last 2 years. Especially because of what happened with Eric Cantor tonight, I decided to highlight this and actually just got done sending out a mass email to sort of letting people know what happened last week on our primary election, June 3rd. A lot of people don't realize. When I came in 2 years ago, when I moved into Lauderdale County to attend the University of North Alabama, I ended up serving as the volunteer county coordinator for both Lauderdale and Colbert County. And one thing that we had that I noticed right off the bat with the Lauderdale County Executive Committee was that it really consisted of about 25 to 30 people, only one of which was under the age of 40. So I started going to UNA. I built from the ground up the UNA College Republicans. Then we used that group to create the Shoals Young Republicans. And then we found an incredible young guy, Sam Mashburn, to start heading out to show teenage Republicans. Within 1 year, I remember going to an executive committee meeting and just looking around the room and seeing that there were about 40 to 50 people in the room, half of which were under the age of 40. It was just a completely different dynamic. On our show of young Republicans, when we founded it, one-third of the founding leadership was African-American, which is unheard of in the young Republicans group in Alabama. And what happened was the executive committee leadership did not react as positively as I was hoping they would. They ended up reacting very negatively and ended up kind of shifting the names around on the ballot for executive committee when some of us ran for leadership. I won a bonus seat on the executive committee when it opened up, and I was running for reelection, and several others were running for election to the executive committee, the county party leadership, and we had the young Republicans in a move that's actually fairly rare, all got involved with the Tea Party and encouraged them to run. And we had a whole ton of Tea Partiers running for executive committee as well. And I just posted this online. We're talking about Tea Party taking down establishment, conservatives taking out moderates and establishment types. And these were the results of the people running for party leadership in Lauderdale County. For their representatives to the state committee, all four committee seats had active Tea Party candidates running. Two of them won outright, and two of them, including me, have advanced to runoffs for July 15th. And on the county level, 9 out of 11 contested seats had active Tea Party candidates running. Out of those 9, 6 won outright, and 1 advanced into runoff. So we talk about Virginia as an excellent example, but I think a lot of people need to look to Lauderdale County as well to see what's really going on. Tea Party candidates that won, that ran, won 85% of the time this election cycle. We had a Tea Party guy running for county commission in Lauderdale County, running against a sitting school board member for county commission, and he won every single precinct in the district, ended up winning the race with 70% of the vote. And, I mean, the guy he's running against was supposedly much more well-known than he was. A sitting school board member, a lot of name in the community, and the Tea Party, they got so organized, and they're actually reaching out and expanding and actually talking to voters, and something that the Republican Party had stopped doing. They're actually reaching out and bringing more people in, but they're winning elections left and right up here in North Alabama, which is really encouraging to see.
Well, and it is encouraging, and we're experiencing the same thing, Trey, here in Texas. And I'm going to tell you, you want to talk about some active young people. Brian is gone. He had some things to do, and so has Dan Butcher. I wish they were here for this conversation. But we had an incredible amount of young people at that GOP convention, a lot of high school kids as pages, and running around not just doing the work, but talking some real good politics and active and some real some great – the college Republicans were there and the young Republicans were there doing some important things. And that's so important, Trey, what you're doing. Because let me tell you, that's one of the problems I think we had at different times in the history of the Republican Party. We end up being the party of the older, and we've got to keep bringing in fresh blood. A young person can get out and speak. We've had Colton Buckley on, as Jennifer mentioned. He goes all over the country, all over the state, speaking and getting people excited and getting them active and getting them participating in the grassroots. And, I just have to say, Trey, we're catching up towards the top of the hour, but I want to say, I've watched you working. The wonderful thing about social media is we have this connection with each other. We don't necessarily always chat back and forth, but I can see the things you're doing. I can see the things that you're posting. Jennifer Montrose, of course, being down there in Alabama, I pay a special attention and have for a long time of what's going on in Alabama. And you're fighting the good fight. And you're setting the example for many, many young people, and they're following. And that's how we take this country back. I always say, Dan and I and Jennifer, we're up there. We're getting ready for the rest home here pretty soon. but I worry about our country in 20 years, in 30 years, in 40 years, when my three young nieces are adults and they're raising their families. And what it's going to be like, what happens to our freedom and our liberty? What happens with our freedom to worship? Which, let me tell you, folks, don't take that for granted, because that's the first thing when the far left really, really gets a hold that they will start taking away from us, is our freedom to worship, our freedom to teach, our freedom of religion. That is, the history bears that out every single time, folks. So you're doing a great job down there, Trey. I'm so proud to know you and to interact with you occasionally on social media. I really would like for you to tell us a little bit. You've got a company going on, the Victory Political Social Media, and I'd like for you just to tell us a little bit about that and how we can help you with that.
Yeah, well, what it is I have started a company where I do social media for conservative Republican candidates, and I make sure I put conservative in there just so no one gets confused. I'm not just working for anybody. But what I did is about a year and a half ago, I was looking around, and I really wanted to start a small business, but I wanted to do something that could actually impact the community. And one of the biggest gaps that I saw in the Alabama Republican community, the Republican Party, was a distinct lack of tech ability, the ability to communicate with people online. I remember being in a committee meeting, and I suggested that, shocker of shockers, our county party have a Facebook page. And I was surprised when there was opposition to that. I was offering to run it for free, but the county chairman, and these were his words, this is what he said. He said, here in Lauderdale County, people still go out to their mailboxes to get the news. And it was that attitude that really wanted me to get involved, and this is what I've done. I used social media to build a statewide network for the Herman Cain campaign. I've used it in a bunch of other campaigns very effectively. So I decided to do something with it, and here I am. What I do is I do consulting, I do training, I just do contracting, basically just their day-to-day posts for social media candidates to get the word out. It's been going really well, and I'd like to think I'm making an impact, but I'll leave it up to the voters to say.
Well, I know you're making an impact. I know you are. And basically, Trey, what you're doing is you're taking what we learned. And we learned a lot. I would like to say that we got a college education. Jennifer and I and Dan and you and Teresa B., she's online with us. Of course, Teresa's been doing grassroots activism for a long time. She'll tell you she was dragging her mom around when she was very young. But we learned a lot. And I have to credit Teresa Brusky for a lot of that. I learned about Facebook and Twitter from her and how to use it. She was the one that kept saying, Scott, you got to get involved with Herman Cain on Facebook. You got to do it. And I did. I had like 5 friends, I think, on Facebook before Herman Cain. Now, all of a sudden, that's kind of exploded over the years. But it's very important, these things that we've learned and these tools that we can utilize, because the left has been doing this for a long time. They were using social media during the 2008 campaign, and we weren't, basically. But we've connected, we're learning, we're on the catch-up, and we've got to get out there. We've got to network, folks. We've got to form up and team effort these candidates that are good and doing exactly what you're doing, getting out there and helping them. Maybe you've got a young candidate that just doesn't have a whole lot of money, can't pay for somebody to do their social media. Help them out. Share their stuff. Give them an offer. I'll tell you what, I'll help you do your Twitter account. Get out there and help them because it's so very, very important. And we're up towards the top of the hour. I think we're going to probably end up going over. I put it in the chat room. If you want to hear the last few minutes of the show, to go ahead and call in. We've got, in fact, 3 minutes left. If you want to call in for the last few minutes, it's 347-205-9620, 347-205-9620, as we go around the table for our closing remarks. We've had a great show. Again, I want to thank Dan and Butcher and Brian. Excuse me, Brian Glover for coming on tonight. My two new friends, I had a great time with them, and the Underground Professor, who we'll have on one of these days here soon, and Trey for calling in. It was a great show, Dan Wilson. We got a lot covered. It's been a great day for conservatives. Eric Cantor, bye-bye, buddy. See ya. You could have stayed there if you would have just stood by your political beliefs, stood by your conservative values, and stood up for your constituents. You didn't, and they said goodbye. So it's a great day for that. So with that, I'll pass it to Dan. I'll pass it to you. Let you pass it to Jennifer. Jennifer, I'll let you pass it to Trey for any final remarks he's got to say, and then we'll go ahead and close out the show.
Okay, great. Thanks, Scott. And one thing I'd like to announce to everybody is Dan Butcher invited me to be a full-time writer with the Pundit Press, so I'm really, really happy to be part of them. And so you'll be seeing my press nationally as well as just on Facebook. So I'm really, really happy for that, and really, really, really happy of what, the strides we've made since 2011. And, you know, this is where Jennifer and I and all of us got together. And it's been a learning process. But today, now, you know, all the hard work we've put in is finally paying off. And, you know, we have Herman Cain to thank. And I hope he's listening. And if he is, thank you, Mr. Cain, because we couldn't have done it without you. You know, you changed the way politics are going to be run from this day forward. With that, you know, it's we're going to continue here on Blog Talk. I'm going to be continuing my posts on Facebook, but you'll also see it on Pundit Press as well. So I'm really happy again with that. And with that, I'm going to pass it over to Jennifer. Jennifer?
And before you do that, I just want to tell you, Dan, Jill Corbett in the chat room says, congratulations, Dan. Jennifer Montrose.
Yes. I want to say that one of the inspiring things with Trey that I've seen is he didn't give up. He met with a lot of opposition. You know, sometimes they say it's hard to teach an old dog new tricks. I think we have some people that have been around for some time, and we have the new generation coming in. They have some new ideas, you know, and then there's some of us that are just really, really interested in trying to get things back to the center, you know, where we need to be in America. And Trey is an individual that didn't stop, even though people, you know, he and I have worked alongside with Stacey Curtis when we were working for Herman Cain. You know, but the nice thing is, even though, you know, after Herman Cain rescinded and Trey went on to do some other things with another candidate, and then I went on to some other things as well, you know, but we're still fighting for the Constitution. We're still fighting for our liberties. And, you know, another thing I would like to say is you know, get educated and know what your rights are as an individual. You know, because we one of the things, you know, that I'm really interested to see where this goes. It's what happened in Congressional District 6, where there were some people that were told that, you know, because we're an open carry state, that you were not allowed to walk into, you know, a polling place. You couldn't go into a voter booth, you know, with a gun strapped on you. You know, it was either, you know, take the gun away, remove the gun, or go vote. And I think that was a total violation of constitutional rights. I know that Trey's probably got some thoughts on that subject as well. And I know, you know, we're about close to the end of the hour, but I'm really interested to hear what Trey has to say. You know, you can hear me every week. but Trey is far and few between on the air, so I'd like to hear what Trey has to say on that.
Well, I would close up by just saying something that I said in a public forum to Mo Brooks once, and he agreed with me, or a congressman up here. It was, I pointed out, we talk about mainstream media bias. It's hard to have a media bias when you're the one setting the media's rules, when you're the one creating the media, and that's where social media is so important. It's hard to put a number, but I'd say probably 85 to 90% of the media has a liberal bias. But you look at social media, for instance, take the Democrat Party and the Republican Party nationally. Last time I checked, the Democrat Party had 1.3 million likes compared to the Republican Party's 1.2 million. That's about a 50-50 split. You're not going to find that anywhere else. That's about as fair and balanced as you'll get as media goes. And we have the power to change things on social media where everyone's listening. We have the power to make an impact. And I'll close up with pointing out that right now the top five trending topics on Twitter are Eric Cantor, Dave Brat, Tea Party, Virginia District 7, and top conservatives on Twitter. Those are the top five hashtags on Twitter right now. So you want to make an impact, that's how you do it. And with that, I'll wrap up. Thank you very much for having me.
You know, I wanted to ask you one more thing, Trey, before you go. You know, when we were dealing with a winter storm, I mean, I think that people don't really realize how valuable social media can be, especially when you're missing a loved one that's caught out there on the highway and stuck in the middle of, you know, massive traffic with no, you know, out of gas and no way to get home. You know, what did you find to be the most helpful thing for you during those hard times?
Well, as far as that goes, some quick numbers. In about a 14-hour period, we managed to organize
300 volunteers build a Facebook group from 0 to 12,000 members and rescue, by our estimation, 1,000 people off the highway that were stranded. I was told that the Alabama Emergency Management Agency was using what we did to model their future efforts, and I personally received a thank you in person from Governor Bentley. That was just through social media what we were able to accomplish. And I think the biggest thing that I saw there was social media is a tool where the entire community can come together in one place and work towards one goal without any obstacles. There's no one standing in the way. And we managed to do that. To see that big of an impact happen that short of time, and that was overnight, too. That started at 10 p.m. We were at like 3, 4, 5 a.m. in the morning using Facebook to rescue people who, on the side of the road, had no gas and had run out of insulin hours before and had no food. We were getting volunteers to get on 4x4 trucks and head out to the highway and pick them up and call in when they got them. And we were coordinating what shelter to take them to. We brought that up from nothing. And it's just the potential that we see there for people to connect and work together. You apply that to politics, and there's no limit to what you can accomplish. I ran numbers once, and I have this as part of my proposal when I'm talking to clients, is if assuming Obama is as efficient with his social media as I am, he reaches approximately 55.5 million people a day. He only won with 58 million votes. So, it's easy to win when you're a household name. So we've got to do the same for our conservative candidates and our Tea Party candidates, get their names out there and get the community behind them on social media so we can make an impact.
Amen,
thanks,
Trey. And again, thank you. I've been watching what you were doing for a long time. Now, a few years, and a huge respect for your faith, for your conservative principles, and your good hard work down there in Alabama. Alabama rocks, folks. There's a lot of good things going on down there, and you're a big part of it, and support you in anything, any ventures you have now and any ventures you have in the future. You can call on us for anything you need, because it's important. It's important, folks. And I want to thank everybody for a great show tonight. Absolutely incredible. Loved it as we started out the show with Deep in the Heart of Texas. I finally, like I said, feel like I really am living here in Texas. It's not surreal anymore. And excited about that. We got some great shows going on Continuing for Truth Radio. I would encourage you anytime, Trey, you want to call in. We've got Conover U on Thursday nights with Rodney Lee Conover. Wrote for Rush Limbaugh for 6 years, wrote for Ann Coulter, wrote for Herman Cain. In fact, him and Chris Bergard were really behind that smoking ad that Herman Cain did. And as well as he writes now for Joe the Plumber. We had Joe on last week, had a great conversation. This Thursday, Rodney and I will be talking about politics. We'll laugh a little bit, cry a little bit. Same time as the show, 9 o'clock, and Dan Wilson, that's Texas time. I'll let everybody figure out whatever else time that you live in. And then on Fridays, we've got Ladies Bible Class. We're kind of taking a little bit of an intermission on what we've been doing. We've been going through the Old Testament, but some of the ladies out there in California that gather at that table we've been gathering at for 5 years now are going on vacation. So they're not all going to be gathering in one place. They'll be listening from different places. And some of them won't be able to participate. So we're going to stop. We're just about ready to watch in the Old Testament the last two tribes, the tribe of Judah and the tribe of Benjamin. Of course, Simeon sprinkled in there a little bit, where they go into Babylonian captivity. We're going to stop right there. I'm not quite sure exactly what we're going to do. We'll probably just do kind of a recap for a few weeks on some things, kind of look at the Old Testament as it's portrayed in the New Testament and its purpose. I'm going to tell you, folks, if you look at that Old Testament history, you will see a portrait of Christ, the Word, and Christ, His church, and the Word in that Old Testament sprinkled about, and we'll be talking about that. And then, of course, on Saturday, Dan Wilson and I get together a second time.
time. We don't get enough on Tuesdays, and we have our Saturday symposium, having some great guests that have been there and done that. Looking forward to having some great guests coming on here in the future, and we have a great time with that. I've got some other great things coming up soon on Continuing for Truth Radio. We look forward as that happens going on. But with that, I guess everything is done, folks. And we opened up with Deep in the Heart of Texas, so we're going to go ahead and close with our opening theme song that we always open up with. Of course, Keep On Keeping On, our good friend D-Rock Country and his great music, folks. Let me tell you, Keep On Keeping On is what we do. We just keep going. That's what this show is all about. We want to thank all our grassroots out there. We want to thank Jill Corbett for listening and participating in the chat, and Teresa and everybody else that was there. And until next time, we keep on keeping on.
Just go wrong, make you wanna holler and shout and throw your hands up in the air, wondering what it's all about. Mm-hmm. And you think that things can't get much worse in a second. Oh, everything just goes south. Keep on keeping on. Whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. Take it one day at a time. God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside. Stand in your way.
They're always saying
what you cannot do. Don't stop chasing your dreams and working hard to make them come true. Oh. And if it ever gets too tough, just remember. Don't kill you, makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. Take it one day at a time. With God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside. The road ain't long. Keep on keeping on. Keeping on, whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before.